Hey, hey, and welcome to Stopping By. I'm Doug Pierce, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with Pinnacle Wealth Partners at UBS Financial.
And I'm Jess DeBeer, Associate Director and Senior Wealth Strategy Associate, also with Pinnacle Wealth Partners. We are located in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, and can be reached at pwp@ubs.com.
Our team's mission, our just cause, is to bring financial literacy and competency to the masses. We've been fortunate to meet interesting people along the way. They have compelling life stories about overcoming adversity and seeking their passions. Hopefully, you'll see that our guests are just like you. So Jess, who's stopping by today?
Doug, today we are chatting with former pro NBAer Randy Foy. He is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services Incorporated, and his views are his own.
An NBAer, Jess? Wow.
NBA. That's basketball.
Can't wait to meet who's stopping by. All right, Jess, I got a question for you.
Oh, look at you doing a little time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm proud of you.
This is good. Well, so I was thinking about this because you are, as many of our listeners know, you are a tall drink of water. And
indeed.
So do you ever regret not playing? I'm sure you get asked all the time, did you play basketball? Do you ever regret not playing basketball?
Yes. Next question.
Great answer.
I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, that I was approached in high school to play basketball.
And?
They wanted me to stand under the net and just catch balls and pass them to someone else who could get it in the net. And I was like, I don't want it. And then I ended up being the manager. I managed.
You managed basketball and yet didn't get the court. What a great story that would have been, Jess. Like the manager the whole time, somebody gets injured. You come in, catch the ball at the basket.
Yeah.
Score.
Yeah.
You could have, it would have been a whole story.
I think I would have been a really good golfer, quite frankly. I mean, I can kill a ball at the Topgolf, let me tell you.
Is that right? I did not know that.
Yeah, I got some good form.
I don't want to ruin your illusion here, but let me tell you, we're all great golfers.
Seen you golf.
Have you? I don't think you have.
I believe I have.
I don't think
you run golf events.
So you don't think I have it. So it's good that I haven't wasted hours.
All due respect. Don't quit your day job.
Your brother said I had a good swing. Was that just something you say?
What's he going to say? You've got a terrible swing. No, he would say nothing. You must. Okay. I'll give you that. He would, if you didn't have a great swing, he wouldn't go out of his way to say you did.
I don't understand it. It should be the easiest sport. The ball doesn't move. It's right there. It's on a tee, in fact, in some cases. But they give
you
this club.
The ball is an inch in diameter or an inch and a half in diameter. It is
not moving.
4 feet away from you. I mean, like 3 for you, but 4 feet away from most people. Right? You got to hit it. You got to hit it with the thing. It's not an easy sport.
Randy.
How are you guys?
Good. How are you? Good morning. Thank you for joining us. We are stoked. Randy,
you have
a fantastic recording voice. Are you hearing what I'm hearing, Doug? I'm hearing some great resonation here in my ears. Have people told you that? Have people said that to you?
I had a podcast. I have my own podcast I did for a couple years. Then we were recording the studio. And my partner would always tell me, like, oh, man, like your voice is really cool. Like when he makes in and match and everything. So, but probably my second time hearing that. So thank you.
Because I feel like you'll listen to podcasts and I'll listen to podcasts and I'm like, I can't do it because the voice is like, you know, nails on a chalkboard. So you want to have that resonation. I used to be a music major. So Doug. It appears we've had quite a few episodes with guests who are somewhat sports-centered professionally, wouldn't you say?
I would say so.
So I think it's because I'm so incredibly well-versed in the world of professional sports. I'm like the Aaron Andrews of UBS Advisor podcast. I think that's what it is. But folks, you are in for quite a treat today because we have another former pro athlete in our midst. We are delighted to be speaking with former Villanova Wildcat and NBA athlete Randy Foy. Randy was the number one NCAA seed in his senior year at Villanova, the first in Wildcat program history, and was named Big East Player of the Year and a consensus All-American. In the 2006 NBA draft, he was selected 7th overall and enjoyed his career in the NBA spanning 11 years, starting with the Minnesota Timberwolves, ending with the New York Nets, and participating on others in between. These days, Randy is the president of Friends of Nova, the official NIL collective of Villanova University. In this role, he mentors student athletes in becoming the best version of themselves, in addition to educating and informing alumni on the positive community and event-driven opportunities Friends of Nova offers. He is a devoted husband and father of three, a sports enthusiast, and is awfully passionate about Villanova University, naturally. Ladies and gentlemen, we cannot wait to dive in with this guest, Randy Foy. Thanks for stopping by.
Randy, that was a heck of an intro, huh? That was almost... you've done a lot and you're not that old.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm glad to say you're not that old because I graduated 2005. So I was at Penn. I was a Big Five, you know, basketball fan watching Villanova get electric. You could argue that your success in the years that you were there, where you were doing some damage in the tournament, elevated the level of Villanova basketball so that ultimately they'd win more championships and things like that. Would you say that's a fair accolade that you can kind of claim?
I would say that is fair. Setting the tone for what Jay Wright wanted his basketball program to look like going forward. That class of myself, Kirby Sumter, Alan Ray, and Jason Frazier, we set the tone. And being a number one seed, being Big East Player of the Year, being a draft pick, first team All-American, just all the things that came after. That when someone received these accolades, someone said, hey, that's a Villanova basketball player. And I always tip my hat to Coach Wright because, you know, he demanded greatness out of all of us.
Jay Wright is pretty impressive. Coach Jay Wright's a pretty impressive guy. We heard him speak last week at a UBS event.
He seemed that
he really cared about you guys in terms of developing you as people beyond your playing days.
You know, my friends always ask me, some fans even ask me when we meet, you know, how is it? Not just to be coached by Jay Wright, but just to be an NBA player. And I always say, if you were a fly on the wall, you wouldn't understand how hard these guys work. And Jay Wright's, you know, if you were a fly on the wall and you saw the preparation, the mental focus of everything that went into what we had to build throughout the course of just not even a year, but from game to game, you'd be amazed. If you was a fly on the wall and you see how Jay Wright prepped us day in and day out, and then the leadership of our captains, you will be just, it's just, for me, it was just phenomenal being a part of that.
In that sense, since you were prepared that way, you weren't even surprised at your success. It was sort of, not that it was expected, but it was a natural conclusion that you'd have success because of how well prepared you were.
A lot of other programs are not ran the way Villanova basketball program is ran. So when you go to the NBA, you know, like you look at it now, like, it's no coincidence that the New York Knicks fans love, you know, Mikal, Josh, Dante. They understand what they have to do on a day-to-day basis to execute at a really, really high level. And may not be as talented as the other people, but, you know, they work hard. And, you know, if you're a New Yorker, you understand that every single day you go out and you work hard. You work your 9 to 5, and you may work longer than that. Then you come back to your family, support your family. And they appreciate that work ethic. So it's no coincidence why those guys, those Villanova Knicks are so successful in the Big Apple. Those guys have lived a great life, but it all started there with the discipline, supervision of Coach Jay Wright.
All right. So you brought up the NBA. So you are drafted the number 7 pick overall by the Celtics, right? And then before your feet even touch the court, you're traded to the Trailblazers and then traded again to Minnesota. Talk to us about what that was like going through that period of I'm pick number 7 overall, great thing. And then all of a sudden, 3 teams later, I'm in a different spot.
At that moment, you know, that's a great question. At that moment, Doug, I knew it was a business. And within the first, I don't know, hour of being in the NBA, I was traded twice. And I didn't have to move from city to city. So I didn't care where I went. I'm going to play against other NBA guys in the NBA, and I'm living out my dream.
Yeah, I can understand that. You're like, I don't care. And at this point, just get me there. Get me on the court. Let me play. So you land now at Minnesota. You land on the team, and they have 6 point guards, which means even though you're drafted really high, you know, you've got a lot of other players ahead of you to get onto the court. How did you approach that situation?
I really didn't understand at that time that, you know, KG was in the prime of his career. He was an MVP in, I think, 03. It was time to win for those guys. And for him, I was playing so well in summer league. And I got MVP of summer league. And then like towards the end of it, they were like, oh, we're signing a point guard. And I'm like, what do you mean signing a point guard? You know, I knew what that meant by the numbers that they signed them to, that I would be coming off the bench. And I never came off the bench from high school to college. So that set me back mentally for a little bit. And I kind of got around it. The person who helped me get around it, who had the tough conversation with me because he could see that I was out of it, was Kevin Garnett. And that's why I always respect Kevin Garnett for just being real. His main thing is focus, determination, and just tenacity every day to try to be the best version of himself. He puts it out there on the floor. Once he explained that to me, the rest of my season that year changed. Ended up being on first team all rookie. I think finished second or third rookie of the year voting. But I understood at that moment. I kind of took over and started for the person, the veteran they signed for me, and had a really good rookie campaign.
Now you're having success with Minnesota. And then how many years later, and then you get traded again?
Once I go through the process of being traded, I was like, wow, that happened quick. The best thing when you get traded, the best thing is to do it when you're not in season. Because when you get traded in season, you got 24 hours to report sometime because there's a game and they want to get you into their system. They want to get you the playbook. They want you to understand the way, how they do things, different terminology. So it's no, and if you got a family, you got to go. So that's the hard part of it.
Doug and I ran into Pat Bev from the Jetway when we were going to a client meeting in Chicago, and it was the day he was traded. And I had to tell Doug who it was. I mean, But what I didn't realize is that if you're traded, like, that's it. Like, you got to go, you got to get out. I can't imagine in my own job where you get shifted to another branch or something and, like, you got to get out. It's crazy to me. We were trying to get him on the podcast, but, you know, Doug dropped the ball a little bit. But I do want to talk about longevity. But before I get to the longevity question, I have a TPQ, which is a tall person question. Doug, just pause for one second.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'll turn my mic off.
Okie dokie. So I am very tall. My husband is 6'9". I have a nearly 6'7" tall son. And
I'll tell him how tall you are, Jess.
I'm You're six right. feet tall. I'm 6 feet tall. No one notices my height because of the giants that I live with. But thank you, Doug. Thank you. I am 6 feet tall.
Of course. Yeah.
My TPQ here is, where do you get your pants, man?
Lululemon.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah.
Get out of here. I'm making a note. My son will be delighted.
I travel a lot and, you know, we'll travel and I have to jump off the plane and, you know, be ready to, you know, talk to, you know, a group of people. So, you know, I'll do, you know, a blazer, a nice shirt with some Lululemons, or my girl Jill out in San Diego.
Yeah. You got a girl Jill? Yeah, I don't have a girl Jill.
She did my suit for me for my draft. And I've been with her ever since.
Shout out to Jill.
I too am wearing Lululemons. I imagine the length is a little different on mine versus yours, but we'll co-sign that endorsement.
Just a little bit. Okay, so let's get back on track here. So to get to the pros, you have to be a top performer, of course, and over 11 years, you participated on 7 teams. Over the course of your career, you likely had to play different roles on the court, and in order to stay in as long as you did, you must have developed a mindset for longevity. So to what do you attribute your staying power?
Just work ethic, adapting, being blue collar, hardworking, being selfless, educating myself around different terminology to be able to pick it up really quick. I would say self-discipline. My first 3, I was number 1 or number 2 on the team. I would say year 4 through 8, I played a role. And then I would say year 9 through 11, I was a veteran. I knew my role. I still played a major part, still started and played a major role, but I was 1, 2, or 3. I knew that. Whatever role I had to play, I played it to the best of my ability. I would prepare in ways that I knew the competition wasn't preparing. Even if that I thought that competition, if I was a little delusional, if I thought that competition was 19 and I was 33 when I was playing, and there was a 14-year gap there, I still just prepped. And a lot of times I noticed when I would prep and I would work, I would see the younger guys watching. And when the younger watching, I would grab them and say, hey, you might as well jump in. Towards the end of my career, I got a lot of joy out of seeing someone struggle and going through the process with me, like shooting routine, ball handling, passing, film, just talking through different reads. When I would see execute at a high level, it gave me glory.
You're making me think of Jay Wright said that attitude was everything. And I'm sure that's one of the things that you, I'm sure, had with you all along. But it made me think of when he was talking about how the attitude of the players was what mattered most. That's what carried them the most. Yeah. Okay. So in 2014, you hit the game-winning shot against your former team. Tell us about that moment.
I was playing for the Clippers the year before, and then I signed with Denver. But, you know, I was playing for the Clippers in 2012. But I was playing for the Clippers, and the Clippers, they haven't been to the playoffs, and I would say it was a long time. We get in the game, and every time you play against your team that you played on previously, it's normally a point like you're like, all right, can't sleep. You're excited because you just want to put your foot on their throats.
And, oh, I like it.
I'm well buttoned up now around everything that I'm doing, or at least I try to be. But I'm on the basketball court. I'm a totally different person. They were coming to town. I knew it. And just like you just mark that date off on your calendar. Like, yeah, it's go time. I'm going to give them everything they want. I'm having a terrible game. I think I got like 8 points, and I was playing really well at the time. I don't know what I was averaging, but I was averaging double figures. But I have like 8 points. Like, nothing is going my way. They drew up a play for Wilson Chandler at the end of the game. And my thing was like a decoy, like where I run across, because I was a three-point shooter. I run across the face of the defense. As I run across the face of the defense, try to get them react where it could be some type of misdirection on the other side to get someone to move, a screen, a pin down. But my teammate, J.J. Redick, they put J.J. Redick in a position as a center to make a pass on a dime with 4 seconds left to Wilson Chandler, which he was, if you look at the film, he was wide open. Wilson Chandler, the basket. Well, we could have won it that way. But then Jason, he looked at me like, help. And I looked at it like, it was like within a split second where I looked at the clock and I'm like, oh my God, it's 7 seconds. And as I run to the ball, I played with Blake Griffin. You know, I played against these guys and Blake knew. So Blake came out. And I know how athletic Blake is. So my thing was to try to catch him off guard with my footwork, running into the shot to make it look like I'm a drive left, but I'm a shoot. So I just came off and I planted my right left, and it just was routine. And I just went up. And as soon as it left my hand, I could tell because I was falling left. But as soon as it left my hand, I knew it was going in.
Randy, yeah. So these, first of all, you just rattled off some names. Let's pick up these names. You got J.J. Redick. We got Blake Griffin again. I mean, this is amazing that you're around all these great players, and this, all these thoughts are going through your head. I'm going to pretend like I'm driving. I'm going to shoot. That is what professional sports are about. The fact that these things are happening, and it's instinct. And you, like you said, your training just took over.
It's a tenth of a second, man. The way you just got to, the way we operate, like we're pros, and you know, we're programmed in a way where you're watching stuff move at full speed and slow motion.
Yeah.
You're functioning in a way where it feels like you're in the Matrix.
Yeah.
being in the zone is probably one of the best feelings ever, because that defender is at your mercy every time you have the ball, and they know it.
I never played basketball myself, but I feel like I'm in the zone and I am in the Matrix every time I walk into DSW. You know, shoes are important. So I totally understand. I'm totally in the zone with you right now with what you're saying.
All right. So we've talked a lot about basketball. I want to talk about the after basketball. Here's my thought I was thinking about today, Randy. I became a financial advisor at 23 years old. Okay. Now I'm sitting here thinking about almost 20 years doing it. If you came to me and you said, you're no longer allowed to do this thing that you love to do, you got to do something else. You know, in your world, you grew up at a much younger age wanting, pining over basketball, right? And I imagine that ever, you know, I know in high school, you were a great player that got you recruited to a great school. You excelled in college, NCAA, and then went on to play in professional sports. And then to get to a point in your career, you're no longer able to play basketball. Tell us about that process. And like, how did you approach, okay, what am I going to do now for the rest of my, because you're a young guy.
I was going through withdrawal that first, I would say, year.
Yeah.
Where I had a chance, my agent saying, hey, you know, stay ready because around the playoff time, and I had opportunities to go. But I think when I came back home and I played for the Brooklyn Nets that last year, and I stayed in my house that we bought in 2008, and then the opportunities that I had with the wife and three kids to move back west for year 12. It was just, I couldn't do that to my family. You know, I didn't want to go out there and be on a team that I knew wasn't probably going to be great, but be on a team and then get cut and then have to come home with your family. Like, I didn't want to do that. So early on, I would say from year two, I was prepping for life after basketball. I wanted to do something around the business of basketball. You know, I wanted to be a leader and make decisions. You know, I wanted to be able to sign someone, but have the conversation with that kid, his representation, his circle, and make a decision, you know, a gut feeling decision based off of my experience throughout the course of just being a basketball player and going from team to team. And, you know, I do it now at a really high level at Villanova. I can tell when someone's legit. I grew up in the inner city of Newark, New Jersey, and I made it out of that. And to go to the NBA and live the life that I lived, that I'm still living to this day, that's easy. But to be able to change someone's life by just having a conversation and telling them what I experienced and what I see in them, and being a big brother to those guys and helping them get through whatever they're going through, because I've been through everything, slumps, just feeling like I'm not in sync with anything. I've been through that. So when you see other kids go through it, you know, anything is therapy. Get your shots in, lift some weights, get some sleep, hit the cold tub. That's therapy. So do that and you'll be all right.
You mentioned this, the Friends of Nova. Tell us about what that is. Tell our listeners and maybe talk to us a little bit about NIL and what you're doing there.
So Friends of Nova is the official collective of Villanova University. And basically what we do, it's an alumni-led, fan-driven collective. A collective is a group of folks that really believe in something that's a separate entity of the university. And with it being a separate entity of the university, we don't abide by the same rules. But there's a pot and there's a war chest that we build to support our student athletes. We support all of our student athletes, but it has to be an appetite around the fans. We're a great academic school. Everyone loves basketball there. So people support basketball, the tradition around basketball, the wins, the championships, the NCAA tournament, Final Four. People love basketball. But if you're going to support another varsity sport, you just have to have your alumni and fans say, hey, this is important to the coach. Let's build a war chest. And once you test, you know, myself and my team at Friends of Nova, we present what we have for you. And the coach knows from multiple meetings with the athletic director or being well educated and informed around what's going on with the NCAA, that there's a portal. There's a retention piece where your kids may go into the portal, but you say, hey, you can stay here. We can help compensate you in this way. Or there's a piece where it's a really good high school kid that you want. And you're saying, this kid, we really want him. What type of package we can put together to make sure that they came here to support or play, be a student athlete at Villanova University. I came into the picture and they saw how well I performed. That group of folks said, we can reset this and we can bring the house home and we can have Randy be the face of it, continue to do the job that he's doing. And so they allowed me to go out and hire folks. Now, the president of Friends of Nova, and they just basically said, just go out and, you know, just do everything, you know, hard, but at the end of the way, do it in a Villanova way, you know, still keep our Villanova values. So when I had that conversation, I was like, well, everyone that I hire here has to be a Villanova alum. When you're going to someone and we operate as a for-profit and they're not getting a write-off, it's trusted faces. We're an event-driven collective where we operate through working with charitable organizations. So you may not get the write-off, but
right, to make you're indirectly.
Yeah. But to make you feel good about supporting our athletes, we'll go out and we'll work with the Teen Impact. This is a local charitable organization. Or we'll work with Atlantic City Boys and Girls Club. We'll work with them in a way where our student athletes is basically mentoring them. And then we also have different partners that we work with where UBS is soon to be the official bank of Friends of Nova.
Is this it here. Exclusive?
Are you we, heard it, it here,
folks. Yeah. Okie dokie.
It's an exclusive, but like we've been working so hard behind the scenes. And the folks at UBS, just they understand, you know, this new world that we're going into. I walk to these meetings with some of your most polished folks there, and they understand. There's a lot of people that say, let me sit back and see what happened. They understand that financial literacy is important. A lot of athletes, they come across a lot of money, and one thing that they trust is real estate. So we're going to do educational webinars monthly with them to talk about real estate and how you should invest your money, how you should read the market, when to sell, when not to sell, what the interest rate looks like. And these are all programs we're putting around NIL and supporting our student athletes. And this is something that I know, because I talk to our alum all the time, that they're proud of.
It's fantastic. It really is. And I love hearing you talk about Villanova. It's like you're sparked inside when you talk about Villanova. It sounds like a mindset of every single person who takes a course there, who teaches there, who plays a sport there, who works there, who mops the floor there. It's like this attitude of positivity there.
Yeah, it's just a family.
I think growing up around you, Randy, I'm listening to you. You talked about when we started this podcast, you're talking about all the great players you watch. I mean, you have a tendency to throw accolades to other people and don't make it about yourself. I was looking at the list of people you played around. You mentioned Kevin Garnett, Andre Iguodala is on there, Nikola Jokic, Blake Griffin, JJ Redick. You play with all these great players. Who was somebody you were around that just wowed you? Like you saw the first time you saw him in person, just absolutely wowed you.
I knew Nikola Jokic was going to be special. His rookie year, Jusuf Nurkić, was basically, I think Jusuf Nurkić was like the 16th or the 19th pick. And Nikola Jokic was in the second round. And I think that was my second year in Denver. And his attitude with not playing and not getting the minutes that he wanted. And everything was not going his way. But every single day in practice, he had a smile on his face. He showed up early. He stayed late. He lifted weights. He watched film. And he did it every single day. And I remember us playing against the Spurs, and they had Tim Duncan. Nikola Jokic got the start. As he gets the start, he's going up against Tim Duncan. right mind, Tim Duncan's a legend. He went right at him, hitting him with all type of moves, scoring. And from that moment on, I was like, yep, that kid's pretty special. And I knew he was going to be good, not because of like all the individual stuff or accolades that he had now, because he was a pass-first big man that always kept the defense honest. But the one thing he always wowed me with was just he had a high basketball IQ.
High basketball IQ. That's pretty cool. I love that. All right, Randy. So we do ask each guest two questions. Before I get to that question, I just have one other question that I just thought of. Am I correct? Did you purchase a home from the boss, the Bruce Springsteen? And if so, did you have to like rid your house of a bunch of bandanas before you could move in?
It was like a compound.
Okay. So he split his property and you purchased a piece of the compound.
Yeah, I purchased 6 acres. I live in an area where Bruce and Bon Jovi live to this day still. And you'll see them around, but people don't bother them anything.
Note to my 13-year-old self, make trip to Red Bank. Hold on, guys. I just got to make a note. Make trip to Red Bank, New Jersey.
I picture Randy, you sitting in a restaurant, like Bon Jovi walked by. Nobody's even talking to him. And then like the first time that you go in, they're like, is that Randy Foy? Is he in the neighborhood?
Yeah. Right. All right, Randy. So tell us, what is your earliest memory surrounding money and what does money mean to you?
My earliest memory is when I was talking to my agent and we were talking about where I would be drafted at. And it was like anywhere between like 4 and I would say 20. That's when I realized that I was stepping into some life changing money. That was the first time like talking about like financial advisor, you know, just different things I had to do with like life insurance, just in case something happened to me. Money is not everything to me. I think if you build the right brand and you're passionate about what you love and you go into that every single day, you just love what you do, everything else will fall into place. And I look at it as a domino effect. You should do something that you're passionate about and work really hard, and everything else just take care of itself.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
I was sitting here as you're talking. I just want to say a lot of these things that I wrote down, I'm not, there's no BS. I mean, these are like, I have 2 young boys and the lessons are work ethic, selflessness, passing it down. I mean, these are things that at every stage that you mentioned to us through college and pros and even with your own family, they've allowed success to flourish. And so thank you, Randy.
Doug, we have been in the presence of greatness. I'm sad to be ending this interview because this might be my, don't tell anybody else, might be my fave. I cannot thank you, Randy, for your time and chatting with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for spending your time with us. And thank you for stopping by.
Thank you. Thank you.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.